This is 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Peddler Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's October 26th, 2020. Wow, October 26th. That means we're getting close to, like, the winter. Anyway, welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles. that was Fran, if you're watching. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming show news and cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the comment section. Or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. We're recording our shows now on Mondays right here in the lovely Bassett's Bridge Road residence because we are not going into the radio station for quite some time now by the looks of things. Anyway, you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, and now on Spotify. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of this station. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, there's a famous line, and Fran just cut out on me, so she'll come back and she may comment on this or she may not. Famous line from the Game of Thrones. Does anyone know what that line is? I was going to have Fran tell you, but that's okay. I'll tell you right now, and that is, winter is coming. Okay, so winter is coming. That is something that we need to think about. It is my rant of the week because I wish it was summer all year round, and I know it is in other parts of the country. I am aware. Hello, Southern California. Hello, Arizona. Hello, other places in the United States and also other places in the world. But, you know, we have winter, and we live in the Northeast, and anyone who's in a northern state here in the United States is understanding where I'm coming from here, because as things get a little bit cooler outside, we kind of need to prepare for it in various ways. Some of us are far hardier than others, and some of us are not. So my rant of the week is going to be diving into the show a little bit more too, a little later on, and what kind of shape are you in and your indoor cycling plan? Because probably will turn into an indoor cycling plan if, unless you are super hardy and love to ride your bicycles in snow and ice and rain and anyway. On a positive side, I have some humor here that was brought to my attention by the lovely Dr. Storch, and she said, "Oh, you gotta check this out. There was a piece on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR, and they were talking about a cyclist who rode 2,500 miles from Poo Poo Point to Pee Pee Creek." Yeah, we got some bathroom humor here. This is from United Press International. It's kind of funny. I thought it would be a good way to cheer you up a little bit here, and as we you know, are looking at the possibility of some more lockdowns coming soon. Oh boy, not too thrilled about that. And also the fact that we're going to be, you know, indoors a lot, and the weather is starting to deteriorate, and I beg you to get outside as much as you possibly can, because it's really, really nice. But anyway, the Chicago cyclist Ruben Lopez rode 2,500 miles from Poo Poo Point in Washington State to Pee Pee Creek in Ohio, halfway to his intended destination of Pee Pee Island in Newfoundland and Labrador. He was raising money for Yemen Relief and said he rode exactly 69 miles per day to travel from Poo Poo Point to Pee Pee Creek. Anyway, it's bathroom humor. It went to the press. It became a little viral thing, and it's pretty funny. But anyway, we just thought we would bring it up on the positive side, just get a little laugh in there and have some fun with it. Little bathroom humor for you on Bicycle Talk. So, in the meantime, we are going back to, let's see, what else do we have here? Always updates on the Rail Line Trail North. Check it out. Every day is different. There are roads that have reopened that have tunnels underneath them now. It's getting closer, folks. And another piece, too, and I left it on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. If you are an Airline Trail user, remember there is a closure over on the East Hampton side right now because they are putting down fresh stone dust onto the trail to repair the trail. And that's a great thing. That's a really, really good thing. They're keeping up on the maintenance on it. So excellent, excellent. Hello, Eric. Hello, Greg. Nice to see you guys there. Hi, Chris. I see you all watching today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. The Maintenance Minute. Okay, the Maintenance Minute is very simple. This is the time of year to be watching out for wet leaves and sticks. And this is kind of a warning. But it's also, it falls into the Maintenance Minute just because the stick issue and the wet leave issue could endanger you and you could fall off your bicycle. And in which case you would be doing damage to the bicycle. So therefore it's a maintenance idea. Sticks. Let's start with sticks. Sticks are down all over the place. The trees are dropping their leaves. The trees are dropping any dead sticks that may be on the trees at this time of year. We're seeing a lot of that. And you see a lot of it on the trails. So if you're a mountain biker or if you ride on the Airline Trail, you're just going to see sticks everywhere. The problem with sticks is, there's two things that a stick can do. Stick can kick up pretty easily and get into your rear wheel between your rear wheel and your rear derailleur. If it's a big enough stick, it will stop the wheel from turning and it will also stop the drivetrain from moving. So if you do encounter a stick, here's the big clue, okay? Stop pedaling now. Stop. Just stop pedaling and bring the bike to as quick a stop as you can. If you continue to pedal and you have a stick and it's stuck into the rear derailleur and the rear wheel, you will snap that rear derailleur off faster than you can say, picked up a stick. So it's really, really critical that you do not force the drivetrain forward when you have a stick that you've picked up on the trail. So that's my first little hint. Wet leaves. All right, wet leaves. Why do I mention wet leaves? Because the leaves are down everywhere, and someday, somehow, we will finally get some rain around here. It's been pretty miserable. We've had quite a little drought that we're suffering here. We even had a wildfire out here, which is kind of crazy. Northeastern Connecticut, a wildfire? Burned 100 acres of land. It was big enough to do that. Anyway, it happens. Happens everywhere. We're really, really dry. But when we do get that rain, we're also going to have lots of leaves on the road. And remember, they are slippery as ice. So if you're going around a corner and the roads are damp and there's leaves down, you may find yourself right where the leaves are on the ground. So be really, really careful. That's my tip on the Maintenance Minute. Watch out for the wet leaves. Watch out for the sticks. Don't fight with your bike. If your bike picks up a stick, don't try to ride it through. Simple. It's general common sense. But anyway, I like to mention it because I've seen so many derailleurs that are broken off. And oh, here's another little tip for you on the Maintenance Minute. When this is a really good time, if you do not have one yet, to have a replacement derailleur hanger in your little seat bag on your bike or home at your, you know, repair stand or whatever. You want to have a backup derailleur hanger because what'll happen is that derailleur hanger is designed to actually break off, and so if you do have a situation like this happening, that thing's going to just snap right off, and then you're going to be out of luck because now you're going to have to figure out where to get a hanger. If your local bike shop has one, probably not, then maybe you could get one there, but almost always they have to order them because no one has a standard on a derailleur hanger in the bicycle industry. That's a good rant for the week. I should look at that one next time. So there's every bike has its own specific hanger. Make sure you have a backup. Make sure you have a backup waiting for you. Cliff Parker. Hello, Cliff. How you doing? There's a shout out to an old friend who's an old cranky bike guy like me. That's a good thing. It's beautiful. So anyway, maybe that extra hanger in your seat pack would be a good idea. Or, you know, someplace where you won't lose it at home on your workbench, in your toolbox, whatever. But keep an extra hanger around this time of year, because this is a pretty common problem. And especially if you ride a mountain bicycle or a cyclocross bike or even road bikes, I've seen it happen on. So moving on to the content of the show, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the Giro d'Italia. If anybody out there was watching the Giro d'Italia, and I know there are because I have comments from people that are pretty regular with me, and I have seen some good comments back and forth, and I've also had to shout out to Billy, my friend Billy, to say, no spoiler alerts, please. I need to, let me watch it when I get home or whatever it is. But the Giro, it was unbelievable. It was really like, again, we have just so many things happening. And all I can say is if you're an aspiring bike racer, if you are thinking that, this is the career path that you're heading, first of all, talk to me about that, because it's a tough career path. But, that's what you want to do. I get it. I totally get it. You better work on your time trial skills. Because your time trial skills could be the make it or break it. It happened in the Tour de France, and it happened in the Giro this year. So in the Giro, there was a short time trial at the end of the Giro in Milan at the very end. They didn't do the parade like they do in the Tour de France. They did the time trial at the end. And the lead had changed already a couple of times, and Here we go. Big time trial, big change in, and they were maybe a second apart at the most. That's how they really determined first and second place before the time trial. And then comes the time trial. And Theo Gegenhardt, big tip of the cycling cap to Theo. I mean, he sat in there the whole race. I'm not going to say sat in, really. He was in the top five. He was definitely a contender. But he was also a contender only because Geraint Thomas went down on a water bottle early in the Giro. So there's where the drama begins. Your lead rider for Team Ineos is out after stage three, stage four, whatever it was. He caught a water bottle in a feed zone with his rear wheel, not his front wheel, and it kicked him out real hard. He went down hard on his hip, and he broke his pelvis. So now he's out, and Ineos has to sit down and go, okay, what are we going to do now? We've lost our GC guy. He was the one. So hand the reins over to, let's see who's going to perform. And it turned out to be Theo. And Theo is, he never expected to win the Giro. He just, they've interviewed him and he's like, I didn't come here for this. I was hoping to be in the top five. I didn't expect it at all. And he ended up walking away with the jersey. So pretty cool stuff. Anyway, there were a few other things. Jai Hindley was second. He could have won it, but he didn't. Wilco Kelderman was third. He could have won it, but he didn't. It was all amazing. Of course, J.O. Almeida from Portugal, who we were watching wear the pink jersey for a large portion of the race. He was, hot 22-year-old rider, just up and coming big time. And, everybody's kind of watching him because he was doing pretty good. And then they got to the mountains and things got ugly. And let's talk about ugly, because a couple days before the time trial, there was a stage that was just raining, nasty, ugly, the mountains. It's all about the men, the mountains, and the magic. It's really pretty cool. But anyway, so many things change, so many things happen, and three lead changes at the very end of the Giro within the last three or four days. Doesn't get any better than that. This is why we love to watch bike racing, why we love to talk about bike racing. It was a good thing. So that's it. It's a done deal. It's over. And, of course, 5 days before it was over, the Vuelta España started. So we've got the Tour of Spain on right now. And there's even more excitement there. Primo Roglic made a massive attack at the end of the first stage, and just, you know, put 15 seconds on everyone, and, you know, he was holding on to the red jersey, and, you know, everything looked really good until he made a mistake, or they say it's a mistake. I don't know. I'm someone who gets really, really cold and hypothermic. So he was putting on a rain jacket. It slowed him down. He lost some time. He just, you know, and unfortunately he lost the red jersey that day too. So crazy stuff. We'll talk about that in a minute. I want to go back to, talking a little bit more about, Team Ineos and, also the strategies involved here. So Dave Brailsworth is the team manager for Ineos Grenadiers. And he, they pretty much, Ineos ran the show this time. They did a really good job. They were the number one team. They ran the show. They had riders that were winning stages. They had a lot of spotlight out there. Lots and lots of spotlight. They did a great, great, great job. It says here, Dave Brailsford has proclaimed a new era at his team after Ty Grogenhart's Giro d'Italia victory. And he declared that what he termed to be the defensive style of the Team Sky days as a thing of a past. We're Grenadiers now, the team manager twice said in an interview with Eurosport in Milan, referring to the team's current name after the petrochemical company Ineos took ownership of the team last spring. Brailsworth, who has now overseen 11 Grand Tour victories since the team was established in 2010, suggested that the change in sponsors had changed the identity of the team, having faced criticism in some quarters for a big budget, control freakish approach. He was keen to highlight the Giro, where the Ineos Grenadiers won 7 stages, and Grogenhart took, you know, the final day as a turning point. By the way, you know, he did not hold that jersey for the entire tour of Italy. He was not ever in the front. So it just goes to show you that if you stay steady with what you're doing and stay directed that way, you don't have to be the big jersey holder until the very end, which is when he got it. I'm going to mention something else too. He's the old man on the Grand Tour of the GC guys. He's the oldest one to finish a GC tour this year. He's 25 years old. They're still super young. This is kind of interesting because we're seeing all this youth coming into the bike racing, the professional bike racing circuit right now. And I find it very exciting because I'm just looking at, you know, what's going on. I mean, we had a 21-year-old kid. I mean, they're all kids now for me, folks. We had a 21-year-old kid win the Tour de France this year. Who would have thought? Not normal. Not normal at all. We haven't seen this for a very, very long time. So it's, you know, it's pretty exciting to see what's happening and in the bike racing world. But yeah, an old man won the Giro. He was 25 years old. And,
oh, that's old.
Yeah, there she is. She's back. So anyway, yeah, he, and again, I mention it one more time. He never held the winner's jersey until the last day. That was it. So kind of cool. Now there is a curse and there is a special about wearing that jersey. They say that when you wear the winner's jersey, it gives you more power and more, you're just more psyched up to to perform. And when you really have to dig down deep, the jersey, they say, gives you that extra push.
So should I wear pink when I do my hill repeats today?
Well, only if you're winning the Giro d'Italia, yes.
But I won't be doing that.
But okay, so no, it's probably not going to work.
So I should wear blue.
I would wear something that will keep you warm because it's not warm outside right now. So that's what I would do. But anyway, so Brailsford was pretty happy, and now they're going into the now they're going into the Vuelta, and hello, things are looking good for those guys. We will see what happens. There was a big thing that happened in the stage. It was yesterday. They're on a rest day today, and it was brutal. If you got a chance to check out any of the video footage or read any of the details on that race, it was just, you know, the weather is, it's not Spain in August, let's put it that way. Not at all. It was cold and rainy and nasty, and, you know, it's just, things are different now because we've got this, you know, we've got this COVID thing, and the COVID thing has changed all the dates on the Grand Tours, and so this is what we're dealing with. And so we've got Grand Tours basically in cyclocross season, which is kind of weird. But then again, there it is. So anyway, we'll touch on that one in a little bit. I just think that, you know, as much as there is a like and dislike for the Ineos Grenadiers, Dave Brailsford's a smart guy. And he's stacked his team fairly well. He's got good people riding for him. There's going to be some big changes next year. I mean, a couple of his riders are going to, I think they're going to the Israeli Emirates team, I think is going to pick up both Froome and...
Israeli Emirates? I don't think so.
What?
That sounds scary. It would be United Arab Emirates or Israel, whatever that team
is. Well, it's the Israel, whatever that team is. Okay. I didn't say it right. But anyway, they're going to be losing both Froome and Thomas to that team next year. So those guys are going away. But why should they care? They got these young guys coming up that are solid performers. So the other guys are aging out, so to speak, and we'll see how they perform under a different jersey. We'll see what happens. But anyway, Brailsford is certainly a smart guy, and he seems to have a plan, and it's fairly obvious. And you know, love him or hate him, he's smart. So, so anyway, it was fun to watch the Giro. It always is fun to watch the Giro. I've been always a big fan. Let's go to Primo Roglic's ending of his lead at the Vuelta España. This was now the last stage six, and his lead was overturned by another dramatic day on stage six after the Slovenian and his team made a collective mistake on the climb of the Alto de Cotefablo. And driving rain, prospect of cold, wet descent before the final climb, the race leader eased up on the Category 2 climb after having problems putting on his rain jacket. At the front of the peloton, his rivals took advantage and accelerated, and although Roglic was paced back into the peloton at the foot of the climb, the effort decimated the Jumbo-Visma team. When a new race leader, Richard Carapaz, guess where he's from, Ineos Grenadiers, and Mark Soler of Movistar, and Hugh McCarthy of the EF Pro Cycling Team, attacked with just a few kilometers to go. Roglic was forced on the defensive. So, what does this tell us? First of all, if you're going to be an aspiring bike racer and you're going to be living on your bike, learn how to dress and undress on your bike and with efficiency, because you got to learn how to get that jacket on. You got to get it on quickly, and if you can't, just toss it aside and deal with it. I personally would have put the jacket on, but, you know, because I don't do well with hypothermia. And if you take a look at the general stature of these riders, they're they're skinny. They've got no body fat, and, you know, it's critical that they don't freeze. And so I understand, but, you know, you got to learn how to put that jacket on. And if you didn't get it on the first time you had trouble with it, get one of your teammates' jackets and put it on. But, you know, just don't lose time over it. That was tough, and that cost him. That cost him a major position. He's not even in the top 10 anymore. So it's a big deal. You go from, you know, wearing the red jersey to not even being in the top 10 just because of a jacket mistake. So they're, I'm sure, talking about it a lot. Things like this happen. The Vuelta is definitely wide open at this point. We'll see more, I am sure. So we'll see what happens here. But that was kind of an interesting point. And I just thought I would bring that up. So the standings currently at the Vuelta, it's like Roglic's not even in there. And somewhere down here, I had the listing, and there it is. So we are looking at Richard Carapaz, who is now the jersey holder for the Vuelta right now. It was just a really, really, really tough stage. It was rain-soaked. It was cold. It was won by a solo from Astana's Ion Izagirre. And that was fun to watch, too. That was just, you know, if you catch the finishing kilometers of the race, it was really exciting. He was beside himself when he finished. It's just, there's so much emotion that is involved in this sport. It's really kind of interesting. Anyway, it's why I like to watch it. But there is a 25-second time difference between Ion and, this is just the standings from the race. There was a 25-second difference between the two of them, and then they were spread out another 27 seconds, 38 seconds on down the line. Carapaz from Ineos Grenadiers has an 18-second lead over Hugh McCarthy from EF Pro Cycling, and Danny Martin from the Israel, they call it the Israel Startup Nation, that's what they call it. He is 20 seconds behind, and Primo Roglic, I got that wrong. He's only 30 seconds behind. So we still have major race here in front of us, big time race in front of us. So there's going to be some fun here. But that one hurt him, and he had to ride pretty hard. The good news is a rest day today. So I'm sure that Primoz has had a good chance to, you know, recover from what happened. And 30 seconds is not that big a deal. That's where we're looking at right now. And Roglic has the points jersey right now. So and who is second on the points jersey? Richard Carapaz. Who is third? Danny Martin. So, you know, the big boys are all up there in the numbers. So that's kind of cool. It's going to be an interesting race. I think it's going to be a really interesting race. It's a little shorter than it has been in past years, so they're a few days short on that. It's still going to be great to watch. I'm beside myself with this. I love this stuff. So it's really good. I'll be reporting on it every week and giving you my general overview on what I'm seeing out there, but going to work on that. Egan Bernal, remember him from the Tour de France? He had to pull out. He's working to resolve his Tour de France back injuries. He'll get back in the groove, I'm sure, in no time. But that's something that could probably be fixed as far as that goes. Chris Froome. Remember Chris Froome? Remember Chris Froome, right? So they were gonna plug Froome into the Vuelta and, you know, probably make him the GC guy. But he's not. He lost time at the Vuelta, and he is now focusing on supporting Carapaz. So this is where he's at. He's 35 years old. Is that old? Not in my world, it's not, because I'd love to be 35 again. But in the bicycle racing world, yep, it's old. And so he is going to start showing signs of fatigue when you wouldn't normally see it. He is going to have to focus a lot more intensely on his quality of training. You know, this is what happens when you get older. You start training a little smarter, hopefully. Or you get a lot smarter in the Peloton and you figure out, you know, how to do things a little bit differently. But I'll tell you, he's got some riders to contend with. These kids are young and they're strong and they're showing. I haven't seen a strong rider like this since I'm going to stick my neck out here and go all the way back to the days of Eddie Merckx. Eddie Merckx was winning from day one. He was just an amazing rider, and you know, and he held that for a very long time because of it. He's one of the few riders that's won all of the Grand Tours. He's won everything. He's just won everything. Five-time Tour de France winner. Just solid rider. But anyway, Eddie will always get the major tip of the cycling cap from Pedal and Ron on that one, because he's awesome. I was listening to a commentary, and one of the it was from the Giro, and the commentator, whenever I say tip of the cycling cap, he would just say, and chapeau too. And that's what he would say, tip of the hat. But so I might have to establish that. I kind of like that. It's kind of nice. So anyway, Chris Froome is riding, as the, lieutenant right now. He's going to work for, Carapaz, and rightfully so. You know, Carapaz is in really, really good shape right now. He's definitely showing that he's showing championship qualities. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, that's it. It's going to be interesting. So tomorrow we will start with another stage of the Vuelta, and we'll see what's going to happen there. I don't know if I actually have a stage map here, but I don't seem to have it in front of me this week. I will have it next week, so we can talk a little bit more about, you know, what's up and coming with the Vuelta. Hang on here. I had this labeled here in, in the I Remember That department. We're going to go back to, remember a motorbike that took out, there was an incident with Julian Alaphilippe in the Tour of Flanders. Remember all that? Well, there's been a response, and you know, you got to be paying attention, like hyper attention all the time when you're racing your bike. Things happen so quickly. It can happen, but the motorbike rider responds after an incident that took down Julian Alaphilippe, that took him out of the Tour of Flanders. And his response is, "I feel guilty even though I can't help it." So this comes from a report, and this is interesting, because this guy, he knows what he's doing. His name is Eddie Listens, and he pulled his race jury motorbike to the side of the road to let the leaders pass, and Alaphilippe rode right into the back of the static bike at full speed. So, you know, it was truly Alaphilippe's oops. You know, he should have been watching, and he had his head down because he was pushing hard to stay with the two leaders, and he didn't see the bike pull over, and the bike had just pulled over to let them all go, because you don't want to have the bike in the way of anything, and he ended up being in the way. But anyway, he's a 64-year-old motorcycle rider, and he's been doing it for 20 years, and something like this has never happened to him. Afterwards, he saw that Alaphilippe was just talking into his microphone and could no longer avoid me. I feel sorry for Alaphilippe. His injuries are bad, but he also had a chance to win the Tour, and that really hit me hard. He says, "That touches me very deeply. I feel guilty even though I can't do anything about it." And Listens was a number of motorbike riders in front of the leading trio around 35 kilometers left of the race, who all decided to drop behind Alaphilippe, Wout van Aert, and Matthew Vanderpoel as they extended their advantage to more than 20 seconds on the chasers. It was a bummer. It was sad to watch. It was really, really sad to watch. And, you know, everyone will recover. We'll be back. Bike racing is not over. But I just really, really wanted Julian to do well in that race because he had just won the world championship jersey, and it would have been a great twofer. It would have been really, really cool to see. But, you know, that's bike racing. That's the way it is. We all know it if we've been involved with it or have been watching it for a long period of time. So let us move on to something different here. I talked about this earlier when I was on the rant and, you know, what are we going to do and indoor cycling and all that. You know, it's getting colder out and some of us have limits, some of us don't. We were with friends last night whose limits are far lower than my limits are, and they are able to ride right down into, oh, what was Matt saying? He was saying like 30 degrees, I think he's okay with. I'm not okay with 30 degrees. Nah, I'm not even okay with 20 degrees or 10 degrees. No, none of those. Zippo, not happening. 40 degrees is kind of my limit. And, you know, there's things you can do that you can continue to ride at 40 degrees outdoors. You can get, there's a lot of great equipment out there. There's winter cycling shoes, there's booties, there's, you know, there's these little warmers you can put in your, on your hands and your feet. I particularly like the bar mitts that you can put on your handlebars.
Bar mitzvah.
They're not bar mitzvah, Fran. They're bar mitts. Okay. I know it's funny. I know. We can get a little Jewish humor here.
Yeah.
Along with earlier we had bathroom humor. You missed that. You walked out on
it.
Oh,
that, you so. Talked about
poop. Of course I did. Of course I did. That was funny. It's a good thing.
Can you talk
thing.
About it again?
When, no, we're done. We're done. I dedicated a lot of time to it. So I'm gonna, but you can listen to it later on. That's what you get leaving the room.
I had an emergency.
I understand. So anyway, you can do different things. And if if you really just want to get out and move on your bike and be outside, you don't have to ride with, you know, your fancy shoes and cleats and all that. You just put a set of flat pedals on your bike, throw some, Eric says, fat bike. Yeah, Eric, good move. Fat bike's good. And you just, you know, put a set of hiking boots on, nice pair of insulated hiking boots, some wool socks underneath, and you can get down a little bit lower in temperature than I can with any cycling-related shoes anyway. So, you know, there are ways of doing that. I know people that, you know, duct tape the bottom of the insides of their cycling shoes so that air won't come up into the inside of them. You can put an inner sole in there, but of course, if your cycling shoes are a real, you know, nice close race fits, and they're not a whole lot of room to put anything else in there. They make these great, you know, wool felt insoles that you can put in the bottom of your shoe. That certainly helps a lot, makes big, big difference. But, you know, the problem that I have with a lot of the winter cycling booties and gear and all that is you start out and, you know, it's so warm in there that your feet sweat. And then once your feet get wet, then your feet get cold because it doesn't seem like you can really kill the wind. Let me move back up to what I talked about earlier. I talked about bar mitts, and that's a shout out to Ward. Great, great deal. Good company. They do a really good job. I'm not really trying to endorse. I'm just telling you that it's the best thing I've ever used for keeping my hands warm. I can use a light full-fingered glove, and I'm talking, I had a light full-fingered glove on yesterday, and it was 55 degrees out, probably, Fran, probably somewhere around there,
yeah.
And it was too light, and my fingers were cold. If I'd had my bar mitts on, my fingers would have been steaming, and I could have been wearing short-finger gloves, because they really work, and they just, I think that there's two things about bar mitts which I really, really like. One is that they shelter your hands enough to keep your hands from getting cold, obviously breaking the wind. They're made out of a neoprene material, and they break the wind, and they definitely keep your hands warm underneath. But the other thing I think that really is critical on these is that the they also keep the levers from getting cold. And if you've ever worked on anything mechanically outdoors with a cold wrench, you know what I'm talking about. It's just, cold metal, when you touch it, is just nasty. And if you've got a cover over the top of those brake levers, it just, they stay warmer. And when it stays warmer, you don't get your hands to freeze as much, and you're not touching that cold metal, which really makes a big, big difference. So, big believer in bar mitts. They make them for mountain bicycles, upright bars. They also make them for drop bars. Some people think that they're scary to use on your drop bars. Just get used to it. They're not that scary, and they're very, very useful. And a lot of times, I will ride up on the top of the bars, you know, because I'll just have my hands side by side up on the flats on the bars, and then if it starts getting cold, I just slip my hands off and into the bar mitts, and they warm right up. It's really a wonderful, wonderful invention, and they work really good. Wish I could find them for my feet, but in the meantime, no. The other thing about riding in the wintertime is you are probably going to be dealing with a pretty steady wind flow, and most of the wind flow in the wintertime up in these parts comes out of the northwest, so that means it originates somewhere up in Canada. We know it's colder in Canada. It is, I can tell you. So riding into a headwind is really, really difficult and cold. My encouragement to people when riding into a headwind is to start your ride that way and finish your ride with the tailwind, because you'll be a lot happier. And once you reach a point of no return, as far as I can't deal with the cold anymore, it gets instantly warmer when you turn around and come back with the tailwind. So if you can plan your ride that way, that's great. Some days I ride into a headwind when I go north, and I turn around and the wind changed, and I ride into a headwind when I go south. You just never know what you're going to get, but it happens. So try to plan that accordingly. But that's another way of dealing with the fall and winter. And, you know, we're going to go into another winter where going to the gym is going to be a... You know, you can go. They're beckoning me back to start teaching again at my local community center. And it's, I'm having some reservation because it's in France. That's the reservation is sitting here to my left side. She's there's the reservation for those of you who are watching. I would like to be able to teach indoors, but I'm not feeling like I've got good outdoor ventilation for that right now. And that's really what I need. I mean, if I'm outside, I'm good. But teaching a spin class at 20 degrees in a parking lot, not so much. I don't think that's going to work so well for me. And I know it's not going to work really well for the people who want to take the class. So we'll come up with another option, I'm sure. But I think it's going to be an indoor virtual related thing, and I'll keep you guys posted on that as things develop, because we are getting closer to that time of year, which also moves me to, of course, there are so many options that we now have. If you have a smart trainer, smart trainers are really the way to go. If you don't have a smart trainer, if you just have the old fashioned type trainer, you're going to have to be a little bit more creative with how you do it. You can watch, old episodes of the Vuelta or of the Giro or of the Tour de France and, entertain yourself that way. But you are, sitting on an indoor cycle, and it has its limitations. But at least you're moving, so you got to look at that. Or, you could just go for a hike. Or, if you're in the snow season, in snow areas, you can go cross-country skiing. Cross-country skiing is tremendous for cycling. Ice skating is tremendous for cycling. They're both, I spent many winters when I was racing my bike going up to the Yukon ice rink right up here at the University of Connecticut. And they would have sessions that were open during the day that were as long as 2 or 3 hours. And I would just go and I put my hockey skates on and I'd just go do laps. And I would do laps and I'd do intervals. And, as hard as I could go on the ice skates, I would generally stay. I would really try to keep it down in the zone 2 range and chalk it up to long, slow distance training. And I was recording the hours, not the miles. And so you could get pretty good training. And the nice thing about skating is that you're doing a load unload on your quads and on your legs and on your glutes. So you're simulating cycling in many, many ways as far as that goes. Same thing with cross country skiing. I think the best shape I ever came out of the winter with when I was riding my bike a fair amount still is skate skiing in the wintertime. Holy cow. There's nothing like it. I don't know that I could find a much more thorough workout than putting on a set of skate skis and going out and cross-country skiing on skate skis. You get it from the top of your head to the bottom of your toes. You're just like, it's definitely a head-to-toe workout. It's really, really intense and really good. And when you get back on your bike, you feel like you never got off. So that's a good thing. So there are things you can do outdoors. And the more you can do outdoors, the more COVID-friendly it is, obviously. If you got to come indoors, then you will, again, we'll go back to that smart trainer. And, you know, if your trainer is not smart and you would like to see the advantages of the smart trainer, you can go online, you can kind of take a look at the videos and what it has to offer. But Fran is a hooked Zwifter. I can tell you that right now. She loves her Zwift. My friend Bill, who's probably watching right now, I don't know if he is or not, he generally does, and I ride with it. The man's got, I think he's got more Zwift miles on than he has road miles on right now. Anyway, you know, good. That's good. You know, miles are miles, time is time. I don't really like to look at it as much as miles, but as of hours. And, you know, those hours, as long as they're quality hours that you're using or not, if you don't need the quality hours, there's still hours that are spent in the saddle, and they'll keep your sanity and they'll keep your fitness. So smart trainers are wonderful. They really make a difference. I have a cousin who reached out to me because, you know, everybody knows that Ron is the bike guy. So he reached out to me and he said, I'm not going back to my gym. I just can't do it. And he said, I was riding on an indoor bike at the gym and really, really liked it. But he said, I'm just afraid to go back to the gym. Do you have any suggestions? And I asked him if he owned a bike, and he said yes. And then I told him about smart trainers versus regular trainers and what you can get out of it. And for the price of gym membership, you can subscribe to a service that is going to really help you out with that. So he did. He went out and he did that, and that's really good. And so there's options as far as that goes. And like I said, Fran is a Zwifter, a big time Zwifter. Is there an actual name other than Zwifter that is for people who ride indoors?
I don't know if I'm technically what you said, a big time Zwifter, because I don't do Zwift all year. There are people who do Zwift all year.
Yeah, I already shouted out to Bill.
I do it when the weather's not inviting.
Yeah, and so, you know, Pete just said ride to get the time in the heart rate zones per your coach. So if you have a coach, this is a good time to look at maybe getting a coach. You know, it's winter coming. Winter is coming. Winter is coming, Fran. And, you know, this would be a great time to sit down and talk to someone who knows what they're doing and knows how to guide you through this and give you some good advice. And I strongly encourage that. That's great. Why not? Because I'm telling you right now, we're seeing our COVID numbers, which are really, really low in Connecticut, are creeping back up again. And they're all over the place. Out in the Midwest is crazy, crazy, crazy what's going on out there. This just, you know, the COVID numbers are not going away. And we're going into winter. So this is going to get worse before it gets better. And the only good news seems to be that the medical attention that is given once you end up in the hospital with COVID seems to be better than it was back in the early days when they just didn't know how to deal with it. I'm not saying you should go out and get COVID for that reason, but I am saying that, you know, there's a lesser chance of a serious problem. But the big problem that we have with COVID is it goes after your lungs, and that can be lifelong. And we like to ride our bikes. You know, we don't want to do that. So be safe. Please be safe, everyone. Please. That's really the thing you have to do. So there are ways to set yourself up and make indoor cycling more fun. You set up a dedicated indoor trainer space, and definitely with a fan. You know, you want to find a good fan that you can use. Select fun, diverse, and short workouts with variable power outputs. Be consistent, 1 hour a day to 3 to 5 times a week. And and the tortoise beats the hare every time. Yeah, remember that. And then use technology to enhance your riding experience. Swift, smart trainers, you can do that. That'll keep you going. You know, the other kind of cool thing with the Swift is that if you can talk to your friends and they have it and you have it, you guys can actually meet each other online at a specific time. You can actually still ride together with your outdoor friends, but you just do it indoors. And sometimes that just is enough to take that edge off of, you know, sitting on a stationary bicycle, which can get a little tedious after a while. Not my favorite thing to do. I think I burned my brain out on it many years ago. I was a big rollers guy back in the day. That's another one to think about. Rollers. Think about rollers, because rollers are they're more entertaining than a trainer is, because you really have to pay attention, or you really have to not pay attention. Let's see if I can clarify that a little bit. You have to pay attention in the fact that you only have 16 inches of roller to ride on. So you got 8 inches in either direction, and you're off and you're done. And you're not done. You just have to get back on again and, you know, grab onto a wall or whatever support you're using for your rollers. But, best way to ride rollers is to relax and to, you know, drop the elbows, drop the shoulders, do all the things that I talk about when I teach an indoor class, do all the things that I talk about when I'm instructing or coaching someone outdoors. Just don't fight with the bike. When you fight with the bike, you're just going to have all sorts of problems. If you have been identified by a friend or other riders that you ride with as being a little, let's say, squirrely on your bike, a little twitchy on your bike, don't buy a trainer. Get rollers. Get rollers. Rollers will end that right away, and you'll figure it out. And it's not going to be easy, because if that is your style, if you are what I like to call a herky-jerky rider on your bike, someone who is relatively inconsistent in both speed on off, or back and forth, and what we tend to determine in the bicycle world as a bad wheel. If you are that bad wheel and you want to make that wheel become a good wheel, rollers are the answer. They will greatly improve your handling skills on your bike. They make a big, big difference. Because making mistakes on rollers, you will fall off. And that's all there is to it. And once you learn how to ride them and learn how to ride them with comfort and freely, you can practice things like, let's throw this one out at Mr. Rogelik. You can practice taking a jacket off and putting a jacket back on while you're on the rollers. When you learn how to do that, you'll be able to do it blindfolded. And that's not something I recommend, but you will be able to do it that way. So these are all things that you might want to pay attention to. You just gotta know that we are heading back indoors real soon. Unless we have an amazing global warming event this winter, we're all going to be inside a lot. So, and of course, when you're inside, you need to be in a well enough ventilated area and a safe area. Your home is obviously safe. Your apartment is obviously safe. But please be careful of that sort of thing. So I just wanted to touch on that a little bit more. Well, I'm sure we'll probably talk about this more as we get more into our winter podcasts and we can have a little bit more fun with it. Maybe you've got a clever and creative way of keeping your fitness over the winter, or keeping yourself entertained over the winter with cycling. Maybe it's a six pack of beer and a lot of cycling videos. and a couch. I don't know. But what is it that works for you? Let us know. Send over an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com or comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. I'd love to hear your thoughts as to how you handle something like this. So, anyway, more things to talk about. There's always things to talk about. We are getting near the end of the show right now, so we're going to have to start wrapping things up here pretty soon. I do have a little piece here, which I will probably talk a little bit more about in the following weeks, or maybe next week we can bring this up too. We'll see how things look as far as time and events go. But there's a great opinion on the Bicycle Retailer page, and it's by Rick Vosper. And this is, "What's a Rep Worth Anyway?" Why do I want to bring this up? Because I spent a long time being a bike rep in the bike industry. Had a nice long chat with an old friend of mine who's still a rep, and he's on the edge of, you know, do I continue to do this or not? And he's a really good rep. He's a really well-respected rep. He's been around for a long time. That there's an article in Bicycle Retail and Industry News, if any of you are listening right now, and it talks a little bit about what is a rep worth anyway. Personally, I think that they're worth a lot, but I'm very biased on this because, you know, I spent a long time doing that. That personal touch, that human value to business, I think is, it may be old school, but it is certainly helpful. And when you know you at the 11th hour, and I had this conversation with my friend Paul last week, when someone calls you and says, "Hey, this didn't come with that, and I need it for my customer tomorrow, and I'm your biggest customer," you figure it out. And the rep will do that for you, and the company, when you call them, may not be so good about doing that because there's always another fish out there in the pond. And so reps make things happen, and reps add a personal touch, and we'll get into this a little bit more in next week's episode or possibly a following week after that. But I just thought it was interesting that it was brought up, and I wanted to touch on that. So we're going to go back to going through some the events. Obviously, the events are the events. We don't have a lot of events. If you have an event, go check it out. It's on bikereg.com. Check and see what's going on there if you're looking for something to do. You know, the Taipei show, I've talked about that. That's going virtual. The Eurobike got canceled. That's it. You know, here we are. We're still in the thick of things here. So finishing points, what's your indoor workout plan? Winter's coming. And another thing, which I will mention from a New York Times article that someone sent to me, and this I'll bring up next week, is it time for you to start sleeping with your bike? I got to chuckle out of Fran on that. I'm going to leave that right there. I'm going to leave it with that right there. I'm going to let you ponder that, and I will explain next week what it means and why you might want to consider sleeping with your bike. So, fun stuff. This is the way it is. So, you know, look at your winter plan. That's my big thing. I want you to look at your winter plan, and I want you to sit down and write it down. See what you're going to do, how you're going to get through the winter, how you're going to get through another lockdown COVID season, because it's possible it could happen. You know, we're seeing a lot of this outbreak due to family gatherings, and this is the beginning of the eating season and the family gathering season. And if we're not careful, we're going to be back to the same thing we were at last March. So anyway, just saying, the views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of this station. My name is Pedlin Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live or on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page or on a podcast and you'd like to comment, send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, send to the same email address. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening.